Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Ballot, the podcast where the conversation begins. I'm your host, Ryan Eitze. And on today's sort of bonus episode to a degree, I am pulling out of the Disney vault the very first episode of The Ballot ever. When I originally conceived of the show, it was, you know, we were here at Countout, we had a Patreon, and, you know, we did the Patreon anyways. So we had a Patreon and it was a Patreon exclusive show. And I think moving it, I found it was very successful. I found the people that had liked it, enjoyed The Ballot a lot. And I felt that it had a lot more room to flourish as a show on in a public environment. So I wanted to take it out from behind that paywall. The paywall now doesn't exist anymore. It's now like all free. You can go back and listen to everything. But you know what ended up happening is that season two ended up being, you know, the 2025 season. There is a 2024 season that does exist. It is, you know, it's all that paywall doesn't exist anymore. It's totally behind patreon.com/countoutpod. But I had every intention to slowly but surely start bringing some of that stuff over to this free feed and label it as season one, obviously. Now, the big thing about that, obviously, is I might just end. I haven't thought about how I'm going to roll out the rest of it. In any sort of regard, because now I'm just focusing on prepping for 2026 season. But the problem with it is we didn't cover every single new person, and the people we all covered either got in like Cody Rhodes or completely fell off the ballot like Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens or Bray Wyatt, to name a few. So there's only really one person that we covered on this show that is still on the ballot in some regard. And that, of course, is going to be today's sort of re-release behind the Disney Vault episode talking about Zack Sabre Jr. He's the only guy that's still left on the ballot, obviously, in the Japan region. And I wanted to release this one first, not only because, hey, look, he's the only guy that's still on the ballot, but of course, because, look, it's also the very first episode ever recorded. And you'll probably feel that listening to this episode. There are a lot of concepts that I threw at the wall. A lot of this 2024 season was a lot of concepts, a lot of spaghetti getting thrown at the wall. And was that spaghetti delicious? I kind of butchered that joke. But it was a lot of concepts getting thrown at the wall and a different sort of format of what the show eventually has become. More simplified format is what the show is now. So I wanted to release it. This is the start of that movement, I guess. I'm not saying that all of it's going to come out on the free feed, you know, this year or anything like that. It's just, this is the first one I wanted to get out there since Zack Sabre Jr. is still relevant, I guess. Relevant to the ballot, obviously. So, you'll feel that it's very, very new. We have a lot more discussions. The format of the show was less going by three of the big categories. I sort of, for some reason, broke down the three categories into six. And then we gave grades to each sort of category, and I did like a sort of average thing at the end of averaging it all up. So there's that. This was recorded first, so it's also like the oldest knowledge, right? This is recorded. This came out, I think, in January of 2024. So, and this was probably recorded pre-Wrestle Kingdom of 2024 as well. So It's quite old content, as it were. It is a snapshot. But what is interesting about it being a snapshot is that a lot of the stuff we're discussing here is about Zack Sabre Jr. And it's about Zack Sabre Jr. pre-IWGP champion, which I think is definitely the thing that helped get him more, you know, more voters voting his way. So this is like fully a case of like just talking about his work rate. We talk about the plethora of cage match high rated matches he's had in his career. We focus more of the conversation on Japan. We talk a little bit about his Western stuff. But at the time, for whatever reason, I was like, no, we're just focusing on Japan and that's it. And I've changed my mindset on that. So, you know, this episode is very new, very early. I can't stress that enough. A lot of my mindset on the ballad and everything has changed even since recording this episode many moons ago. But I wanted to get this out here, put it out here. And yeah, so this will be the first episode about Zack Sabre Jr. I should say that the guest of this episode is none other than good friend of Countout, Curtis Spears. Curtis, of course, co-hosts the show Ichiban Sweetcast over on the Countout Network. Also, the Throwing Dice podcast. For some reason, I was going to say Throwing Rolls, and that is, of course, Curtis's spinoff baking show. So Throwing Dice as well as Ichiban Sweetcast. Ichiban Sweetcast. Throwing Dice, I believe, is just a sort of like board game minifigure. I don't know if it's called board games, but like the games where you have like the minifigurines and they're moving all around the board and stuff. Minifigs. Maybe it's just called minifigs. And then, of course, Ichiban Sweetcast is a New Japan podcast that we have on this network as well. So obviously he was a guest to get for Curtis Spears. Plus also Curtis Spears lives in England. He's lived in England for several moons now. I think we talked about it a little bit on the show. So, you know, he's also from Georgia, but he moved to England. So it's a whole thing. So we have a wide ranging conversation about a whole bunch of stuff and a little bit new, a little bit old, but look, that's what old content is. You know, it's somewhat evergreen, but also has already been updated since then. Massively, I will say. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it in terms of prepping the show. If you have any thoughts on this audio or any thoughts about the next season, 2026 season of The Ballot, you can give those a call. Give us a ring over at 9495-BALLOT. 9495-BALLOT. That, of course, is 949-522-5568. Yes, we have a hotline. Go give us a ring. Give us your thoughts on this episode. Or more so than anything, I want to hear your thoughts about Zack Sabre Jr. as a candidate. Do you think that he is worthy? Is there something that you think he is missing that he is not just quite there? I think a conversation I want to have this season, especially when it comes to wrestlers that are ongoing and presenting their cases in real time, like Zack Sabre Jr., for instance, like Gunther, like Booker T? I don't think so. But like these people, right? What do they have to do to sort of change your mind or enhance their case to maybe get you over the hump? I would love to hear all of those thoughts about Zack Sabre Jr. and his Hall of Fame candidacy over at 9495-BALLOT. All right, I think without further ado, thank you everybody for listening to this episode. And here we go, the very first episode of The Ballot. Real rough, but I hope you enjoy it. All right, have a good one, everybody. Bye. Hey everybody, welcome to The Ballot. I just didn't have an intro when I started recording. That's fine. Welcome to The Ballot, everybody. Thank you for joining us on the Patreon. I'm Ryan. You probably knew that by my voice. We are here. The goal of this show, if you listen to the trailer that came out, is that we're going to go through month by month all of the new people that Dave Meltzer has put on the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot, or at least the people that he remembered he had announced previously. Sometimes he forgets and adds people later. All the new people month by month as best we can. Maybe not month by month because I think the ballot comes out in like October. So December is going to be a bad month to talk about. I don't know. Bray Wyatt, Zane Breslov or whatever. So we'll see how that goes. But otherwise, we're going to start off strong, I feel. I think we have a very interesting conversation today because I think after doing my research, I think like after, you know, last ballot, vote, Tomohiro Ishii and the beauty pair going in, looking at all the numbers, it's like, man, I feel like the Japan region has really opened up, and having this guy and another guy
pop in here is going to be a very interesting conversation to have. And what better way to have that conversation than with Curtis Spears from the Count Outs Kurt Okada's Shorts podcast. I really screwed up that intro here.
Well, it's a good time because right now, currently still known as the Okada Shorts podcast, this is coming out in January, you say?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, God knows if Okada's even going to be a member of the New Japan Pro Wrestling family. We might have to change this to Tai Chi's pants or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Tai Chi's pants is not bad. I mean, it works right there. You got something right there.
Yeah, Tai Chi's pants, Robbie's bandanas. You know, there's a couple of things we can say. But yeah, currently a member of the Okada Shorts podcast, one half of the Okada Shorts podcast, the International Wrestling Grand Prix. I'm your good friend, Curtis Spears. And yeah, man, I'm excited to talk about the front man of TMDK. Oh, yes. Let's go.
Today we are talking about Zack Sabre Jr., diving into his sort of case. Why is he on the ballot? Why did Dave put him up here? What kind of Hall of Fame case does he have? And, you know, what are the odds of him going in? I appreciate you, Curtis, for coming on. I had the rough choice of deciding between which Okada Shorts member I bring in. And I went with the guy that lives in England. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of got a foot in the door on that one, eh?
So I guess I'll ask first, what is sort of your... What are your sort of feelings about Zack Sabre Jr. As a professional wrestler?
Right now, I think he's a top five performer in the world. I think the dude is so much fun to watch in the ring. He's so much fun to watch outside of the ring. I love that New Japan has kind of given him the ball. And they're saying, you know, here's your own faction full of people who you know. And let's see what you can do with it. And really, like, TMDK with the, we did a tier ranking, one of those Japanese tier rankings that starts at S and ends at D.
Yeah.
And TMDK was at the A tier. We only put one in the S tier. We made sure that we could only put one faction in the S tier. And that was, of course, United Empire for the last year.
Oh, it's going to be awkward next year.
So we put TMDK in the A. We said, you know, we need TMDK to do a little bit more. And, you know, this was a great year for TMDK. Like, you had Fujita, like, explode. Like, the Ichiban Sweet Boy is looking great. You had the Mad Mikey and Hilarious Shane Haste in the G1 and in the World Tag League. And they both comported themselves very well in those tournaments.
Really,
and I think
Mad Mikey really turned himself around in the G1 this year. Like before the G1, it was like, Mad Mikey Nichols, all right, who cares? And afterwards it was like, all right, Mad Mikey Nichols, okay.
Yeah, he might be a little bit dangerous. I'm sure he didn't mean to drop an RA on his head. It's fine. No, like Mad Mikey, he's a pro, you know, he's been wrestling for a long time. Dude is put together. He knows how to, he knows what he does best, and he knows how to bring out the best in other people. Dude's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's see, who else had a big year for TMDK? Oh yeah. Robbie Eagles. A great faction. And then on top of it all, you've got the front man, Zack Sabre Jr., brand new blonde hair, looking like he's got his Hollywood WCW tan on. And yeah, dude, he's looking great. He's looking buff. He's a champ. He's the winningest champ, the champion that's defended the most in New Japan. He's got something like 14 different champion
I'm looking at
television right champion. There it is. New Japan World Television Championship defenses. Woo. Woo. That was wild.
Yeah. 16 defenses.
16.
As of press time and recording December 11th.
No other belt has been.
In fact, he's going to have at least one more.
No other belt has been defended that much in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Jesus.
I think the record is 12 for the junior heavyweight championship. The current world heavyweight championship's like 4. So yeah. I mean, you know, he's definitely like on a hot streak, and I think maybe I wish it wasn't Tanahashi he was facing at WrestleMania. WrestleMania. Jesus.
They're going all the way to Philly.
Ooh, okay. I just woke up 30 minutes ago. The coffee hasn't hit yet.
You're fine.
I wish it wasn't Tanahashi was facing at Wrestle Kingdom. I wish it was somebody who was a little bit more like an Oiwa, Tsuji, someone who is a younger person he could drop that belt to, because he shined it up real nice.
Yeah.
But I do think it's time for him to drop that belt and maybe win the New Japan Cup for a third time, maybe get his first shot at the World Heavyweight title where he can hold on to it, maybe through the G1. You know, yeah. Zach is one of the best tournament wrestlers in the business, and that shows by how well he's done as a junior, how mm-hmm. well he's done as a heavyweight. He's won the New Japan Cup twice. He's got a huge win percentage in the G1 tournaments. Like, we can talk about, speaking of WWE, we can talk about the Cruiserweight Classic that Zack Sabre Jr. was part of.
Yep.
I mean, the dude is great, and seeing him as a defending champion in the G1 would be really cool. So,
yeah, I'm glad you brought up where you want Zack Sabre Jr. to go. My relationship with him is that I mean, this is to make it more as recent as possible. I think that Zack Sabre Jr. might be the most underrated wrestler of 2023. I think he, like, overall, like, you know, across the globe, I think he's so underrated. I think 2023 was his best year in professional wrestling. He literally went the entire year, other than what, the first 3 days of the year, I guess, of 2023 as the champion, the first ever New Japan World TV champion. Like you said, defended it as a press time 16 times. By the time this comes out, he's either still defending it or he's lost it to Tanahashi. And yeah, I think it's like, you know, people, you know, in watching AEW were saying that, like, you know, Orange Cassidy had a great All Atlantic title run. And I think it was really good at the end of it. But, like, I really, really felt that I was like, no, you know, the guy that had a great TV title run or whatever in 2023, Orange Cassidy was pretty good. Zack Sabre Jr. has been great throughout the entire time. I mean, I'm looking at his list of defenses right now. And, you know, you got obviously the Ren Narita one from Wrestle Kingdom earlier this year. Or 2023, you have Tomohiro Ishii. Now he pops up in Ring of Honor all of a sudden. He's facing other guys like Blake Christian and Rocky Romero and AR Fox. Shows up on AEW to defend it. He has a really good match against Oleg Bolton out of nowhere late in 2023. And it's just like, holy crap, this guy's a young lion. This guy is really wrestling well.
Oleg Bolton's a monster. That kid's going to be huge. I mean, he's already huge, but he's going to be something.
He's got like kind of meat on his side. Of course, man. He's huge.
Oleg Bolton could, I think, like, he could throw Zack Sabre Jr. into the sun if he wanted to. It's pretty terrible. I can't wait to see the first time that he and Jeff Cobb lock up, and mm-hmm. you know, they're trying to deadlift each other. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I totally agree. But yeah, I think like Zack Sabre Jr. has had a very fantastic best year of his career, 2023. And it's not like his career was bad beforehand. He, you know, obviously, look, you know, I guess we'll get into it now. You know, looking at, you know, I assume Dave is going to put him in the Japan category based on, you know, that's what he's kind of done with other, you know, Kenny Omega was in the Japan category and other sort of these gaijin wrestlers that predominantly are wrestling in Japan. So I assume that's where he's going. I don't think he's going to go in Europe because Dave probably wants us to focus on Japan. Because honestly, that's where the bulk of his career is right now. He's wrestled in New Japan for, let me look at my notes here, since 2017. I mean, even before then, he wrestled in NOAH for several years, I believe 2011 to 2015. So he has quite a career in Japan already kind of put together. And literally, you know, he's been 5 years of New Japan right now. And I think since the beginning, pushed extremely hard, right? Going through, like, I was looking through like his timeline of matches, and you were talking about this guy shows up to face Shibata, of all people, in March 6, 2017, debuts, joins Suzuki-Gun, wins the Rev Pro World Championship back. And then a year later, literally practically a year and 1 month later, he beats Tanahashi, by win and wins the New Japan Cup final. And then, like I said, a year, a month later, he's in his third main event for New Japan, wrestling for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Well, not World Heavyweight Championship at the time. IWGP Heavyweight Championship at the time against Kazuchika Okada. Talk about a goddamn push with this guy.
Yeah, he's definitely someone that they can heat up anytime. He's someone who when they say like they need a challenger throughout the summer, they need someone to be the foil for an Okada or Tanahashi. And they go like, who's dangerous and believable? You know, we could put out Evil or something, I guess. And like, oh, Zack Sabre Jr. Everyone knows that Zack Sabre Jr. can get a win at any moment. You could be watching a Zack Sabre Jr. match and you're like settling in. He's got that New Japan flair where he can go 30 minutes, or you could be watching a Zack Sabre Jr. match. It's 10 minutes in, you're settling in. You're like, all right, here comes, oh, it's pinned him.
Yeah.
Oh, he submitted him. Like he's the most dangerous dude on the roster. He's so much fun to watch because you never know what his matches are going to be doing. And so when they heat him up, and he goes through a tournament like the New Japan Cup that he's won twice.
Yeah.
He can go through that first one. He submitted everybody. He was just submitting. He was taking arms. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the second time he's getting flash pins over people.
Yep.
So like, he's just dangerous. It's so much fun to watch a Zack Sabre Jr. match because he's a believable threat. He's a credible threat. And he's someone who they can heat up at any time if they need a foil for their world champion. And I hope someday that he gets to be that world champion that they're heating up a foil for.
Yeah. There's sort of an argument that with Will Ospreay leaving New Japan, there's sort of an argument that like Zack Sabre Jr. might be the next type top gaijin out of New Japan. You know, I think that's what's interesting to me moving forward, is that he has the potential and all the tools, I think, to be that next top guy. Jay White gone, with Will Ospreay gone. I think you can agree. I don't think David Finley's quite there yet. I think Zack Sabre Jr. is probably as the best bet to be like, I think in the next 5 years, I think there's a very, maybe even extremely sooner, I think there's a very good chance that Zack Sabre Jr. could be world champion in New Japan, or maybe global champion as of recording time.
Well, I mean, we'll see how much longer he stays in New Japan. If the rumors that I hear are true, I've heard rumors of mass exodus happening soon, but you know, oh goodness. I don't know. I think he's there for the long haul. He stayed throughout the entire pandemic. You know, he wrestled in Japan, lived in Japan, breathed in Japan. Mm-hmm. There were so many people who gave up on Japan through that. That's where, you know, I wouldn't say Will gave up on Japan. He went home during the pandemic. I understand. He came back as soon as possible.
Yep.
Jay White was like, nah, fuck that. I'm not dealing with that.
He gave up a little bit.
He gave up on Japan. Will was there the entire time, from day one to day fucking 700 or whatever, when they finally allowed people to start clapping or doing more than clapping again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's time for them to pay him back a little bit, because he's put the company on his back when he had to. When New Japan's tag team division was failing, you had the Dangerous Techers, who were the best tag team on the planet, Zach and Taichi. You know, now that they're introducing a brand new belt, you know, who are they putting it on? Zack Sabre Jr. So he can, you know, make this a title that's worth paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it may be an ugly belt, but he wears it well, you know.
Hey, he wears that orange quite well.
He does.
Wears that orange belt quite well. Well, let's talk about it, because so obviously there's a lot of qualifications that Dave has in the Hall of Fame. Those criteria that he's listed are, quote, a combination of drawing power, being a great in-ring performer, or excelling in one's field in pro wrestling, as well as having historical significance in a positive manner. I think that you and I can both agree that his best case is easily in-ring performer. He is one of the best technical wrestlers. He won the best technical wrestler award, the Bryan Danielson Award, 7 times in the Observer.
On the hop, in a row, I think it was.
In a row, 7 years in a row. And he I did a lot of research, obviously, watching a bunch of matches of his, and I talked about, like, that first year, like, obviously coming in, they were pushing him super hard, but it wasn't just like they were pushing him hard and he was kind of like, all right, he's fine. It's he pushed really hard and he was dropping like 4+ star matches, like, constantly, you know, coming in facing Shibata. He had a pretty good match. It was first one. I'm not going to say it was, you know, the best one, but he was pretty good. Then facing Tanahashi in his first main event in 2017. Then Tanahashi again in the New Japan Cup finals. Then Okada in the year. All of these, I went like four and a quarter, according to Cage Match. Tanahashi, 8.29. Tanahashi in New Japan Cup finals, 9.03. Okada, 9.01. This is his first year in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and he is killing it. And not even killing it, we talk about the push as well. New Japan Cup, you talk about submitting everybody. He beat in the New Japan Cup of the first year Sanada, Ibushi, Naito, Tanahashi.
Ooh, that's a who's who right there.
It's a who's who right there. That's his first year in the company. And on top of that, obviously coming in beating Shibata day one.
Each one of those guys that he submitted are or world would be world champions. So, wow. Mm-hmm. You know, that shows something. He's not getting wins over Toriano. You know, he's submitting Naito. He's submitting Tanahashi, like, and he and Tanahashi had amazing matches together. I like, they have something, especially that first like year or two, like 2017, 18, 19.
Yeah.
When they were trading wins back and forth.
Yep. Fighting before, over the Red Pro title, the IC title, the New Japan Cup, obviously.
Before Tanahashi's knees turned to dust. And
maybe because of Zack Sabre Jr.
Maybe possibly because of Zack Sabre Jr. one of the funniest things I've ever heard was I was listening to an interview with Jeff Cobb, and he was talking about a match he had with Zack Sabre Jr. where he had to just lean over to Zack Sabre Jr. and be like, dude, I'm huge. I don't bend that way. Like, you're going to have to try something else, man. So, yeah. Yeah, because he will tie you in a literal knot. It's fantastic to watch. But, I mean, anyone who's ever seen him wrestle knows that.
Yeah, that that Naito New Japan Cup match is the one that, like, still to this day sticks out in my brain. That gif of him just like kind of, I don't, you know, I'm not gonna say I know the name of whatever submission that was, because I'm looking at his list of finisher moves.
Oh,
and I don't
so
know,
fun.
It could have been the hurrah another year finisher, I don't know, but it was that gif of just like Naito's like basically spread eagle, and he has like an ankle lock or something on one leg, and he has like a twist on another leg, and he's now he's got like his arm for some reason, and he's just like destroying him limb by limb. You know, literally, quite literally destroying him limb by limb. It's just like, you know, that level of technical wrestling is insane. I mean, there's a reason that he took away the Bryan Danielson Award in 2014 and has won it every year since until Bryan Danielson finally returned. He's great. I mean, he brings back that, obviously, that British style into New Japan, the sort of British style roots, and just has been phenomenal in his line here. And obviously, we're just talking about year one. We haven't even talked about really got into Dangerous Techers at all.
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, where do you want to focus your love and admiration for him? Do you want to talk about your love for his technical wrestling? Do you want to talk about your love for his backstage promos, which are great?
I'm glad you brought that up. I got three for you. I got three promos prepped in the queue. If you want to listen to them real quick,
please do.
All right. Let's go with this one's labeled Naito. Okay, here we go. This is, I think this was a G1 Climax loss to Naito. So here we go.
Naito! Where is he? I know he's somewhere! Naito! I'm going to skin you and wear you as a suit! Are you going to take the piss with a suit? I'm going to rip your skin off and wear it as a suit! Naito! Fuck! 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 Royal Quest 2 just got announced. Today, 5 p.m, I should be in the main event. Night one, me, Jay White,
I should have it, because I was going to win the G1. Bollocks, 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 bollocks. Bollocks, bollocks, bollocks.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So is that the one where he's got the chairs around his neck and he's carrying them around?
Oh, yep. I love it.
Someone at the RevPro, I went to a RevPro show last month and someone had that, just that picture of him with the chairs around his neck on a t-shirt. And I was just like, motherfucker, I need that so bad.
It's really good. It's really good. Yeah, he, that's not the only time where he does promo styles like that. I mean, obviously in this moment, he's doing that sort of frantic energy, desperate sort of like anger of loss, you know, that kind of promo, and just kind of going crazy, and then like slowly over the course of the promo realizing it's all over. I lost, it's all over. And he really brings great energy to that. I have two more here, a little bit shorter here as well. This one, I think you'll recognize this little clip. This one is titled Shakespeare.
As much as Sonata couldn't tap me out, and he couldn't tap me out, could he? He had to pin me with a dodgy count. But I've tapped out Sonata last year in the New Japan Cup. He's only ever pinned me. Yeah. Because no one can touch me. Not in New Japan, but in professional wrestling for Tekkers. Huh? Tekkers means technical skill for you morons. Yeah, I have to translate for you guys as well. That said, it's much more enjoyable being challenged by talented wrestlers like Sonata than some of the other cretins I have to wrestle. Huh? What a waste that match was. In America. Huh? Given a match of that technical quality to an American crowd would be like reading Shakespeare to a dog. Utterly pointless. Endearing to think about, but utterly pointless nonetheless.
Oh, I love
all-time line. I gotta say, an all-time promo line.
Absolutely.
Oh, so good. So good. And the last one, super short. I'm gonna play it real quick. Super, super short. Here we go. This one's titled Strong Style's Dead.
Hey, 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 shut up. I'm still talking. Moron, sit down, you tut. I said before, but it's worth repeating. Strong style is dead. Long live Saberism, as you were.
Yeah.
Long live Saberism, baby. Yes.
I don't like, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think Zack Sabre Jr.'s promo style in any way is sort of like these long sort of soliloquies that, you know, like Jay White or someone is bringing out here or Danielson. It's just sort of like, it's like frantic. It's short. It's quippy. It's to the point. Like he's like a British Spider-Man over here with his quips.
Who cusses a lot more. Spider-Man would not say cunt.
So maybe a Deadpool. But yeah, he has this sort of energy, this constant frenetic energy that just makes it so great to watch him do a promo. It's like, you know, he can do a serious one, he can do a thing or whatever, but he can throw out these insane quips that are just like, he makes him entertaining nonetheless. And I think that's like a good way also to sum up to me his in-ring ability, his technical wrestling ability, is that, you know, I think that for a while there, he was like just a fantastic technical wrestler. But as he's matured, as he's gotten older, as he's put on more weight and gotten more of a striker in him as well, especially for this year, 2023, he has sort of become like this sort of, that he's figured out how to go from just like, oh, you know, cut and dry technical wrestling to a very entertaining watch. And I'm excited to see like what he does next. I never really have any idea what move Zack Sabre Jr. is going to do next, honestly.
I don't think he has any idea what move he's going to do next until he gets there. Mm-hmm. You know, because what he'll do is he's like, okay, I've got a knee bar on here. Oh, hey, look, his wrist. You know, like he just, and it's so funny because they talk about it all the time. Like if you're watching Zack Sabre Jr. and he's doing chain submissions, you can almost set your watch by it. It's 6 seconds.
Yeah.
He'll go like, he'll grab your ankle. You can count to six. And by the time you reach six, he's got his other move locked in. And then by the time you count to six, he's got another move locked in. It's so wild because he's just like free flowing. He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to actually literally take this guy's arm. There's his knee. Oh, wait, there's his ankle. You know, like,
technical wrestling jazz, you know,
it really is. He's free flowing out there. He's doing whatever the hell he wants to whoever he wants, however he wants, because when he gets around you, he's like a boa constrictor.
Yeah.
You know, you can't fight back against it because he's just all over you. And it's absolutely insane to watch. That's how he gets people like Naito into that Clarky Cat submission. I believe it's Clarky Cat that was what you were talking about.
I'll double check, maybe.
Yeah. He's speaking of the best fucking names for moves ever. Like,
okay, so I got some
of on another year.
We got Clarky Cat. The one you might be talking about is the Clarky Cat Bad Balloon
Remix. Yeah, my wife's got a t-shirt with that on it. I've got a Huzzah Another Year t-shirt.
Yep.
Barry
from EastEnders.
Barry from EastEnders, who actually my wife's met Barry from EastEnders before, so that's pretty cool.
Sunday Rail Engineering Works Replacement Bus Service.
Tesco Meal Deals, another one.
Apparently that move I just said is a Boston Crab. Orienteering with Napalm Death.
Yeah, another beautiful British TV reference. Mm-hmm. He's got like a lot of these names are just things. Clarky Cat is a reference to a show called Brass Eye that's hilarious. It's like kind of like The Daily Show, but over here in England.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hurrah Another Year is a band reference. I don't remember what band it is. Barry from EastEnders obviously is a reference to EastEnders.
Yeah.
And what was it? Orienteering with Napalm Death is another, it's a sketch show, but I can't remember the name of it. But yeah, a lot of these things I just knew them as what they were called. I thought he was just coming up with silly names. Mm-hmm. And then my wife's like, oh, Clarky Cat, let me show you the, you know, Brass Eye. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he's bringing obviously the British style of wrestling more, bringing it back more into the New Japan world, but not just the British style. It's like he is like almost like an embodiment of this sort of like, I don't know, you can probably speak to it more as living in Britain, but like sort of this embodiment of bringing like British pop culture, well, maybe not pop culture, but British culture with him. You know, he's not just bringing the technical wrestling, he's bringing like, he's putting Britain on his back a little bit.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he is delightfully British. There's nothing like worldly about him. He's like, I'm Sheppy through and through. Mm-hmm. So like when you're watching a match and he just screams at the audience, shut up, you cunt. Like, and you're like, oh, that was, that was British. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh man,
saying bollocks over and over again.
Bollocks. Yeah. Seeing him in England is so much fun because, I'm pretty leftist myself. So like when he is wrestling in front of a big British crowd and they start just chanting leftist slogans or singing how the prime minister's a cunt and things like that, like it's so much fun. It's just a party atmosphere every time because he's like a hero, you know. Yep. Because he's just delightfully British. It's so, so cool. He's got such a connection with the crowd over here. And I think he's got quite a connection with the crowd in Japan too.
Oh, I fully agree. I think he nailed it day one. I think coming in and being a fantastic wrestler day one has really put himself over with that Japanese crowd. I mean, before we move on and talk about other aspects of his career and other aspects of his case, we got to talk about Dangerous Techers. Going into the pandemic, following the pandemic, through the pandemic, Dangerous Techers gets formed. And I sort of agree with you. One of the best tag teams of that year, if not the best tag team of what, 2021,
2020? Yeah.
Yeah, just phenomenal stuff with him. But yeah, go on. Talk about Dangerous Techers a little bit.
Oh, man. So one of the things about New Japan is they don't have a lot of straight up tag teams. You can even have World Tag League and it's just two guys from the same faction, you know, or like Tanahashi grabbing a young lion, you know?
Yeah.
And so you get those ones that are thrown together. Like this year, I'm not super into just five guys, but I like Yuya Uemura. I like Taichi. And they were like, here's the just five guys tag team this year is just Yuya and Taichi. And I was like, well, yeah, those would be the two guys that I would like to see. And I feel like during the Suzuki-gun, this was like one of the last years of Suzuki-gun. Mm-hmm. Might have been the last year of Suzuki-gun now that I think about it. But they were like, Taichi and, I don't know, Zack Sabre Jr. And I was like, okay, yes. Yeah, let's do that. Okay.
Previous World Tag Leagues, it was always Suzuki and Sabre.
Yeah.
I noticed.
And so now that Suzuki's like started to kind of take a part-timer role and things like that. And I was like, yeah, yeah, those two actually could work. You know, you've got the silliness of the two of them, like really blends very well. But also like Tai Chi is, you know, he's got a mean streak about him and Zach's known for how mean he can be in the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go. Let's see what happens. And it was just magic. It was so much fun to watch because, you know, you've got Zach exploding in the ring. He's just losing his mind. Tai Chi's ripping his pants off, you know, kicking somebody in the soccer style kicks directly to the meat of the thigh. And Zach's tying a dude into a shoelace knot. Mm-hmm. And it was magical. It really was. The one thing I think about when I think about Dangerous Techers was always at the, which Wrestle Kingdom was it? Wrestle Kingdom 2022, maybe the 15, mm-hmm. I believe it was Dangerous Techers versus G.O.D.
Yep.
And Zach gets up on the top rope and Zach's going to jump off the top rope. Oh my God, really? This technical wrestler is going to do something off the, and he's screaming. He's like, Tai Chi, let's go. It's Wrestle Kingdom. And he's like, we got to pull out all the stops. And I was just like, yes, I was like, it's 9 a.m. and I'm trying not to wake up my wife on a Saturday morning or whatever it is. And I was just like, go Zach, go.
Yeah. I talked about earlier about how like this the year is he sort of transitioned from like being like more of a black and white technical wrestler dude into like a really entertaining figure. I think that bridge is Dangerous Techers. If it wasn't not for Dangerous Techers, I don't know if he would have gotten to this new 2023 form that he's in now. He's bringing this level of entertainment. He's bringing this level of devil may care attitude to wrestling, or a little bit of, you know, just bring an energy of like sheer kickage is what I'm going to call it.
Oh, yeah.
To matches he's bringing into it. And it really evolves his style to being extremely great and even better than it was before. And before was one of the best technical wrestlers in the world. So I think Dangerous Techers is, just for him is a great idea and really evolving his style. But Dangerous Checkers was also a great tag team. First title defense or first title win beating Tanahashi and Ibushi.
Another fantastic, tag team. Those matches with the Golden Aces,
mm-hmm.
Oh, you could just go off. I mean, there's four dudes in there who are world class.
Yeah.
You know, like someone might roll their eyes when I say Tai Chi is world class, but the dude is, he's awesome. And you've got Tanahashi, who's one of the best of all time. You've got Kota Ibushi, who at that time was just yoked to the gills.
Prime
and he prime cut Ibushi. And you've got Zack Sabre Jr., who I think is one of the top three in the world.
Yeah.
And Tai Chi, who's just entertaining as fuck. Yeah. It was magic.
Yeah. And then, I think one of the sort of downsides of Dangerous Checkers is, which weirdly helps individual cases for Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr., is just the fact that it existed during the pandemic. You can't tell if it was truly over because there's really no crowd. You can't tell if it's over as an act because there's no crowd to pay tickets for or anything like that. But as far as viewers, as far as watching wrestling around the world, for me, I mean, I voted. I thought they were the best tag team of that year of 2021. I thought they were fantastic. I thought, like you said, they were able to bring entertainment despite no crowd. And that is what we needed during that time period. And I think they really did a good job at it.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. Like, they not only did they bring a bit of levity to a very tough time for people, not only did they bring a sense of in-ring work, but they really were able to elevate that division as a whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had one tag team in GOD, you had a bunch of thrown together dudes, and then you had
Techers. Was Bishamon around yet? I don't think Bishamon was around yet.
No, Bishamon came, I think they did cross over a little bit.
Yeah,
but when Techers started, Bishamon wasn't a thought. Yeah, I remember a lot of people were. That was when Yoshihashi was in the never six man title.
Yeah,
picture with I think it was Ishii and Goto. Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of people who were upset when Yoshihashi first got announced as teaming with Goto, because they wanted Ishii and Goto. You know, you want the big boys. And that's fine. I get it. But like, you know, Yoshihashi is better. Pandemic was great for Yoshihashi. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So you had a little bit of crossover there towards the end of the Tekker's run and towards the beginning of Bishamon. I don't remember any matches that stick out in my head right now. I'm sure there were some.
Of Dangerous Tekkers?
Yeah.
There was a couple that stuck out. Obviously, that first title win over Golden Aces that stuck out to me. I wrote down as a match that stuck out versus Sonata and Naito at Wrestle Grand Slam. It was a match that stuck out because it was a Wrestle Grand Slam, but I also watched it again and I was like, this match is, I think it went, let me see if I can look it up. I believe it went like 40 minutes. It was like, and 40 minutes, no crowd. I was like, oh, I remember this match. I did not really enjoy this one too much.
Yeah. Wrestle Grand Slam was, that was tough. Like they were selling out giant, baseball fields and stuff like that. Just so you could have the same amount of people that you put into Cork and Hall on a regular show. God, yeah. Pandemic was tough, buddy.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Is that I think, like, in a weird way, it's hard to sort of talk about Dangerous Tekkers because it's like, well, it's during the pandemic. It's kind of tough to judge in a weird way.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, you could see it in the merch that was being sold and things like that. There were tons of people who loved Suzuki-gun and Dangerous Tekkers. And, you know, Tai Chi and Zach, like, people still wanted to react to that, and they did the best way they could with their wallets, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That Dangerous Tekkers match versus Sonata and Tetsuya Naito at Wrestle Grand Slam, 37 minutes and 58 seconds.
Oh my God. It would have felt like an hour and 20 minutes with no crowd.
It was longer than the main event by like 30 seconds. Which was main event with Shingo versus Tanahashi for the world title.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that was good.
And it was about 2 minutes longer than the opener, which was the New Japan King of Pro Wrestling title, 22-man Ranbo with handcuffs match.
Oh, God. Oh, King of Pro Wrestling started out real tough, the King of Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the, you know, again, going back to like the sort of pandemic conversation of Dangerous Tekkers, is that that's sort of like the tough part about it, is that like sometime that was always the thing about the pandemic, is that sometimes it can really click, sometimes when there's no crowd and the match just goes on and on, it's like, all right, I gotta pack it in here a little bit. Just, yeah. I can't last that much longer. I'm tapping out over here. But yeah, any other bits about in-ring ability or promo work, any sort of other bits? We didn't really talk about his Noah run at all. I watched a couple matches of his in Noah. How familiar are you with his run in Noah?
I had left most of Noah behind at that point. Basically, I was a Kenta guy in the mid-aughts. So when Kenta left Noah, I kind of left Noah. Like, it was... I'd seen some of the matches. I'd seen, so there were some matches he had with Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
Yep.
There were some matches that he had with Taiji Ishimori, and these were great, but like mostly the matches that I had seen from him were his more international stuff, like back in Rev Pro, the CWC and WWE, those things. I'm not super into what he was doing in Noah at the time.
Which is totally fair. I mean, he's in Noah 2011 to 2015. He's, you know, kind of just like a junior for the first couple of years. And then he starts teaming up with Ogawa and they become a two-time GHC junior heavyweight tag team champions with Ogawa. So he, you know, has a little bit of prominence. He has a little bit of that significance there. He comes in, and then the latter two years of his Noah run, wins the junior heavyweight titles, tag titles, I should say. And that's kind of it. Like, I was sort of looking at it because, you know, he's in Noah 2011 to 2015. He, in 2014, is when he first wins the Bryan Danielson Best Technical Wrestler Award. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, huh, I wonder if, like, you know, something clicked in Noah. Like, what was sort of the cause? What flipped Because I believe in 2013, Bryan Danielson's last year of winning the award, Zack Sabre Jr. was like fifth place. And then the next year he wins it. And I was like, what changed for Zack Sabre Jr.? I was like, it's probably not Noah. That's really the change here. And I look at his cage match. And I was like, ah, he did Bola in 2014. That's
yes. Get up on the PWG. Yeah. He, when you can announce yourself on the world stage like that and have a coming out party against, like, I mean, Bola every year is like the cream of the crop for independent wrestlers.
Yeah.
So, you know, for him to get out there and yeah, I mean, Danielson taking time off from wrestling, like that's going to automatically, like everybody else goes up one bump. Mm-hmm. But like for him to have that coming out party in Bola, like tape traders who aren't really in watching Noah and things like that, people are going to see a ton of new eyes are going to be on Zack Sabre Jr. And I think, yeah, maybe that is the exact moment that his ship sailed, you know, he was ready.
Yeah. That's sort of the interesting thing is like, you know, if you're just looking at his Noah run, right. I don't think there's any sort of Hall of Fame case. He's just sort of a junior heavyweight tag team wrestler that's good at technical wrestling. That's pretty much it. It isn't really until breaking out into the indie scene is really where he gets going. From that 2014 to 2017, he's working Evolve, he's working PWG. I mean, I watched his debut match in New Japan where he faced Shibata for the Rev Pro title. Again, he's breaking out more in Rev Pro as well. He's already working Rev Pro, obviously, but breaking out more. Progress, British wrestling around this time is starting to come up a little bit. So like when he comes into New Japan to wrestle Shibata for the Rev Pro title and eventually win it, he walks into the door wearing the Evolve Championship, wearing the PWG World Championship. He's coming in like one of the best of the indies. So like his Noah run is sort of a hamper, I guess, if you will, on his Hall of Fame case, despite being a junior tag team champion two times over. It's just sort of like, all right, he's on the board. It's really, you know, reinventing himself on the American indie scene, British indie scene a little bit, and then coming to New Japan is really where things take off, which at that point, you know, it's 5 years of a career.
Yeah, it does seem like when you say it's a hamper, it's definitely like lost years.
Yeah.
He could have been making a lot more noise than he was. And I don't want to say that maybe Noah held him down, but
no,
there's a reason why he jumped.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of like, you know, it's Noah was good for what it was. He probably learned a lot in Noah and got a lot of it. It's just at the time, he's still a young guy. He's a really good technical wrestler at that point still. But it's just he hasn't quite figured it all out. And it wasn't until going on to a more, I guess, international stage, not Japan, but going to America, going to PWG is really when things broke out for him. And, you know, if anything, Noah seems like it could have been a good, incubation chamber for Zack Sabre Jr. as a wrestler, which is fine. You know, that a fine little, you know, mid-card junior tag team champion kind of guy. That's totally fine. But yeah,
I mean, you can make your living doing that.
Except it's not much of a living. But yeah, breaks out into the PWG sphere, Evolve, breaks out of American Indies, does do the WWE Cruiserweight Classic, gets into the semifinals, ends up not signing with WWE, chooses to not sign with them, and then heads over to New Japan, as like we sort of said already, has been in New Japan ever since and kind of been killing it, I would say.
Yeah, it seems like all the stars kind of aligned for him. Like he got to the taste of the indies. He saw what Noah had to offer. He then sees what's going on with New Japan. And he says, I, as a wrestler, am at a crossroads. Here's where I can go. And I think he made the right choice, obviously. Like,
yeah,
would
he have a Hall of Fame career if he went to WWE instead of New Japan?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, this is all, you know, make believe theory right now, but like, you know, coming in, he's under Danielson at this point, right? So would he would have come into 205 Live?
I don't know. I mean, he definitely wouldn't be as explosive as he is now, because they would have taught him like press training and things like that. So he wouldn't have been able to to learn to evolve that aspect of his game, that, you know, yelling and shouting and calling Boris Johnson a cunt and things like that.
A lot of stuff that makes him entertaining would have been smoothed over.
Yeah, it would have kind of been toned down a bit. The matches, like, everyone says that the WWE matches are toned down from where people want to be or what they can do, but like, WWE does have a lot of great wrestlers, so you would have seen some fantastic stuff. The CWC itself had a lot of great matches in it. I want to say no, just like instinctively, just ew, no. Yeah. But the dude's got something. He's got something. Yeah. You know, obviously he's connected with different crowds and things like that. Would he connect with a WWE audience? I don't know, man. Like we're seeing, I didn't think that Walter would connect with the WWE audience, but you know, now as Gunther, he definitely is. He's connecting on some level, and he's being pushed on some level. So would Zack Sabre Jr. have been pushed in 2016, 2017? I don't know about that.
Exactly.
But
I actually have a quote here from Bryan Danielson. It was a quote that he had in the lead up to Wrestle Dream, right when he wrestled Bryan Danielson this year in 2023. Bryan Danielson said, quote, "I'd be like, why didn't I think of that? When I was in WWE, a lot of the technical wrestling Sabre was doing wasn't conducive to that style of technical wrestling. But when I was on the independents, I did a lot of that stuff. I was just blown away by what Zach was doing. I continue to be blown away to this day." Sort of going in line with what we're talking about here is that, you know, Bryan Danielson even admitting that, you know, I did a lot of that stuff on the indies, but as soon as I got to WWE, I couldn't really do that anymore because they didn't really, that's not what they wanted. So the kind of going to what we're saying is that, like, you know, he obviously made the right decision for his career, and he has become, I think, one of the best wrestlers of 2023 for sure by choosing New Japan instead of WWE.
Yeah, I think it was the right choice for sure. It would have been probably a much harder road if he had chosen WWE. Would he have been living more comfortably? Probably. I mean, you know, he would have had time to establish a home and make probably more money. Would he have been happier? I doubt it, because they wouldn't have let him work RevPro shows and things like that. Mm-hmm. No, I think he made the right choice. He knew where the bread was buttered, and he made the right choice for sure.
Looking at the rest of the criteria for the Hall of Fame, I mean, combination of drawing power, you know, do you think Zack Sabre Jr. has any sort of drawing power case? It's hard to really tell with him, I think.
It is. I
do
drawing have... power maybe a tough one, because a lot of his best work, like we've just said, a lot of his best work was done during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right now, crowds in Japan aren't exactly, you know, they're not filling the Tokyo Dome and things like that right now.
I believe they're like just now getting back to 2019 levels.
Yeah, so.
Which is good, which, I mean, that was the best it ever was for New Japan, but still.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough to think about.
I do have.
I can tell you in England, mm-hmm. like, he, you know, when he wrestles for RevPro and things like that, people are, you're seeing these must-watch matches. And they're going for it. They're like, yeah, that's a match that I'm going to pay for. I've done it here, mm-hmm. you know, myself. I've seen going, and these are littler halls. Like, York Hall's not the hugest place in the world, but I've also seen the Copper Box full of people to watch Zack Sabre Jr. You know, I've seen Lewisham Civic Center or whatever, where they're going to have the next RevPro show. Like, I've seen that sold out because Zack Sabre Jr. was going to face Naito, mm-hmm. you know? So he's a draw here. Japan, it's a wild card.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not to take anything away from RevPro as well with him in New Japan, it's at least with RevPro, the downside to that is, like, he for the most part, I would say for a good amount of cards, also on the card is Will Ospreay. So he has it's a tough part when you're like, okay, well, he's also, I mean, people are also trying to see this guy. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Not taking anything away from Sabre, but it is he is wrestling, you know, he is probably, you know, my evaluation of him is that he's probably, like, I don't know, the second best British wrestler, at least in modern day, in the world. You know, he's the best British wrestler in modern day, not named Will Ospreay.
Yeah, it's so tough when you talk about English wrestling to not talk about Will Ospreay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they acknowledge that. When, God, what was it? The RevPro 11th anniversary show, the weekend of All In, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. came out after Ospreay's match and was like, we too have put English wrestling as a whole on the map, put it on our shoulders and carried it into the, you know, through the darkest time that it's ever had. I mean, pandemic was a horrible time for for English wrestling, not just because WWF or WWE decimated the scene, but because of the speaking out scandals, multiple schools closing and things like that. And it was just like, everywhere you look, you're like, I can't cheer for this person anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't see this person anymore. What am I going to do? And then you think about, okay, but Will Ospreay is possibly he's an alien. The dude's a mutant. He's the best wrestler on the planet. And Zack Sabre Jr. is the best technical wrestler on the planet. I'll say it. I don't think Danielson has it to that level anymore that Zack Sabre Jr. does.
Ooh, and that's the hot takes on one of them. There we go. Maybe, ooh, sizzle.
I mean, they single-handedly, Ospreay and Daniel, or Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr., almost said Danielson, Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr. carried England through the pandemic and into the future. And it's beautiful to see, man, because, you know, English wrestling was fucked up. English wrestling was bad off during the pandemic. And so seeing, you know, two of the best wrestlers in the world still coming from the English scene it's really nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, I put together at least like some, trying to look at some of these attendances for Drawing Power, and it's like in New Japan, and there really isn't really like much of a case. I mean, the biggest case I can give him is first main event versus Tanahashi, where he's fighting for the IC title at the time. First main event in New Japan that he has, 3,600 in the arena, and that beats the previous year of 2,800 in the same building. The year prior, and the main event of that show was Omega versus Yoshihashi. And I was like, well, I mean, yeah, Tanahashi versus Zack Sabre Jr. is probably gonna draw more, but you know, that 2,800,
a little bit more,
that's pretty good. The second main event versus Tanahashi, the New Japan Cup Finals, the 3,996 is the attendance. The year prior in the same building, 4,000, so really not much of a difference. The year after for them in 2019 was like 3,991, so pretty much the exact same. New Japan Cup Finals, pretty much that exact same. So he's not popping numbers there, really. He had a little bit of a dip versus Okada for his third main event for the world title, first time doing world title defense. But the previous year in the same building was Okada versus Shibata that sold about 2,000 more tickets. But again, that's Okada versus Shibata. I can see why that sells a little bit better. And then by that point, you know, once he starts like really established as a guy, the pandemic starts. And this entire time, I'm looking at only main events. Like, it's tough to look at anything other than the main events that he has. By Dangerous Techers times, you know, New Japan, other than like World Tag Leagues or wherever, you know, tag titles aren't really being defended in main events, really. So it's really hard to tell what if anything is drawing, especially during a pandemic. And by time, you know, 2023, he's wrestling, you know, for in these TV title matches, he's sort of popping some houses for Corkins or whatever if he has a title defense. And you know, he's but there's not, I guess, what I'm trying to say is there's not really much of a drawing power, but I think he is a very interesting case because I don't think drawing power is really the big thing here. I think it's his great in-ring performance, and I think it's historical significance. You know, he's not a world champion by any means, I guess, in this company yet. His titles have only been New Japan World TV Champion. He's a three-time IWGP Tag Team Champion of Taichi. You know, we talked about how he's already a two-time GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champion with Ogawa and Noah. He's obviously a four-time RevPro Undisputed British Heavyweight Champion, which I'll only bring up since so many of those defenses were in Japan. He's won the New Japan Cup twice. He's been a G1 Climax semifinalist every year, basically, from 2017 to 2021. He obviously won the World TV title tournament to become the champion. Accolade, 7-time Technical Wrestler Award winner from 2014 to 2020. Yeah, I mean, historical significance, one of the best technical wrestlers. And like you said, you know, maybe it's subjective, but either better or not. He's either better or just below Bryan Danielson, which is an award named after him. You know, like I said with Ospreay, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. is the best technical wrestler not named Bryan Danielson, to a certain extent. And that is, if anything, you know, he might be not be number one in England. That might be Ospreay. He might not be number one in technical wrestling. That might be Danielson. But he's number two, and a close number two.
Yeah, at that. One A, if anything. You know,
I would agree with technical wrestling, especially 1A for sure. 1A, 1B for sure. But yeah, I mean, historical significance is just like a fantastic technical wrestler. Despite not really having many titles, you know, major titles in New Japan, he's never won the never open weight title. He never won the IC title. Will he win this new global heavyweight title? Who's to say? But he's only been a tag team champion and now a world TV champion. He's never had a singles title until this year. So it's sort of an interesting historical significance case. At least when it comes to titles, he doesn't really have much.
He doesn't, but I think that's kind of the test run. I think this TV title run that they gave him, because they're like, okay, you've put on mass, you're trying to improve your body to be better on to more represent what they want to see in a star.
Yeah.
You've been handed a faction of your own that's ridiculously over. Mm-hmm. They're trusting him and his faction to raise up one of their young lions that they have a ton of hope for. Mm-hmm. Here's a brand new belt. Can you establish this brand new belt? He obviously has. And I think it's just a test run. It's got to be a dry run, you know, to see what they're actually able to do with him. If he stays in the company, I think he's going to win. I want to say he's going to win a G1. I would love to see him win a G1.
Yeah.
Cause he's done the New Japan Cup twice. Mm-hmm. Does he have the, you know, can he make the next level and get to the G1 or G1 final? Maybe. I think he could do it. I would love it.
It's interesting. You know, we talked about a little bit about the Cruiserweight Classic and sort of that divergence point of his career. If he stay, I mean, who's to say what his career will look like if he goes to AEW, WWE, or goes back to Noah or something? You know, we're working with, I don't know, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in any world right now. You know, is that divergence point of, I think if he stays in New Japan, you know, give him better contract, give him more money, you would almost have to push him even more. And I think you're right. I think, you know, he can easily become that next level, become that next guy for New Japan, especially in that sort of gaijin territory of New Japan, the non-homegrown talent. It's very interesting. It's almost like, you know, if we're looking at him literally as a Japanese category Hall of Fame case, staying in New Japan has a really good shot of giving him a great case at being in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think the best thing for him to do right now is to look at the current landscape of other people who have jumped ship. Mm-hmm. You know, who have left New Japan. So you've got, let's look at the big names that have left New Japan in the last 10 years or whatever. You've got Shinsuke Nakamura, who's
starting all right.
You've got AJ Styles. Ooh,
pretty good. Kind of faltered as he got a little bit older, but he's older. So, you know, we'll give him that.
You've got Kenny Omega. Oh, okay. All right, sure.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Also good.
It's good. World champion. You know, he's one of the figureheads of that company.
Weirdly on at random times.
Yeah.
Fine.
Odd. Jay White. Ooh, still. He's
not a lot of time, but the time he's given is great because he's great.
He is great.
Yeah, it's just like he's not really given much stuff to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, like,
and then Will Ospreay, like, obviously, we'll see.
Will Ospreay, you know, he's about to jump. And I think Ospreay is going to be a world champion very shortly in AEW.
I agree. And then when Kazuchika Okada heads to TNA, we'll see how that goes.
Oh, God. Oh. Just punch me in the face next time instead. Oh, my God. Can you imagine? And I said this on Twitter the other day, how hard it's going to be to next man up Ospreay and Okada. Imagine Ospreay, Okada, and Sabre.
I talked about this on Ring Post Radio recently. By the time this comes out, like 2 months ago, that like, yeah, New Japan can't lose Okada. Imagine losing three of your top guys in a 6 month span.
Oh,
Jay White, Will Ospreay, and Kazuchika Okada. I was like, that's impossible. You can't do that. What are you doing? You can't.
The company, they just fold. They just they have to fold. You put the belt back on Tanahashi. Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, dude's only 42. Yeah, it's fine.
What's the worst that can happen? Maybe Shingo can have the belt finally again.
In front of a crowd that can actually make noise. Oh, God. Shingo, what a champion, dude. Just, he was like, nobody wants to hold this belt for longer than a month. That's cool. Shingo's going to do it. Let's go.
Give me the shot, baby. But yeah, so I don't know. Do we have any more things to really talk about here with Zack Sabre Jr.? Any other parts of his case that we want to dive into more? I don't know. Do you have any other things?
So what are the it's drawing power,
the combination in-ring of work. Drawing power, in ring performer, as well as having historical significance in a positive manner. Dave Meltzer continues, candidates should have something to offer in all three of the categories mentioned, or be so outstanding in one or two that they deserve inclusion. I didn't bring this up yet, so maybe this is a good point to bring this up, is that I think that, you know, looking at what his chances of getting into the Hall of Fame are, and I think that what's interesting about it is that I think what honestly helps his case a lot, weirdly enough, and this is sort of a ramification of last year's Hall of Fame ballot, is Tomohiro Ishii getting in. Is a guy that has just been consistently great for years. One of the best tournament wrestlers for years. A guy that's never won world championships in this company for years. A guy that, in a weird way, has a very similar case, I would argue, maybe, to Zack Sabre Jr. Jess has obviously, you know, gone a little bit longer than him. So in a weird way, Ishii getting in kind of opens the door for Zack Sabre Jr., I think.
Yeah, I've had this discussion with a friend of mine who's a WWE fan. Mm-hmm. And we always talk about, like, is this person a Hall of Famer? And he's talking about the WWE Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't know if he's had a Hall of Fame career. And I'm like, dude, Coco Beware is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Come on. Like, anybody can get into Pete Rose is in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Whoever says yes to a WWE contract, Legends contract.
Basically. So, like, when you think about Ishii going in, it shows that, like, hard-headedness, no pun intended, and dogged determination can get you into this. Zach's got that in spades.
Dog. Pun intended on dog.
I meant that one, yeah. So when you think about, like, Ishii going in, he's not a world champion. He sells merch just fine. The crowd loves him.
Same sort of thing as Zack Sabre Jr. Not really a draw case you can really create for him.
Yeah, but his matches are fantastic.
Yeah,
I was saying this to Kieran. Everyone who's into Puro Wrestling knows Kieran. Saying this to Kieran, like, Ishii matches, you know, what's your favorite fast food? I'm a Subway guy.
Ooh, that's probably a smarter idea. Mine's Taco Bell.
Oh, I love Taco Bell. There's like seven Taco Bells in England. Oh, I love Taco Bell. But
Nando's though, and I'm just jealous of that.
Nando's is overpriced Buffalo Wild Wings. Fuck Nando's.
As a guy that lived in DC that luckily had a Nando's, no, it is not. It's so much better than Buffalo Wild Wings.
Get out of here. It's the hot sauce. You can buy the hot sauce here. You don't need to actually pay for Nando's. So I like Subway. I go to Subway and I get the same thing every time.
That's me, you know, everywhere.
I get the same sandwich every time. Yeah. And every time I'm like, man, this is a good sandwich. I should get another one of these next week. You know, and like, that's Tomohiro Ishii matches.
Yeah.
You watch it and you're like, I like this sandwich. I like this match. You know, it's the same match. Zack Sabre Jr. doesn't have the same match twice in a row. So if Ishii's in-ring work is enough to get him into the Hall of Fame, to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, Zack Sabre Jr.'s is way more than enough to get him in.
I didn't think about that. You're right. Is that, you know, Ishii, you expect the same thing, and it's been the same consistent quality, great quality for years now, half a decade, more than almost a decade. Zack Sabre Jr. has also been great, but it's almost always different. I mean, it's obviously in the same vein, you know, it's not like, you know, it's still like a different, you know, different ingredients of a Subway sandwich versus like eating pizza or whatever. But it's still like there's always a different thing outcome. Like we said, we don't really know what he's going to be doing in that ring. He's always mixing around these Subway ingredients. He's going to Subway and saying, okay, I'll have cucumbers this time. Okay, next time I'll have the banana peppers. Next time I'll have whatever else on a multigrain. I'll have it on wheat. I'll have it on Italian. You know, he's just going to go all over the place. This is a wild metaphor that we're now constructing.
we'll workshop it.
But this idea of like, he almost has a weirdly more diverse in-ring performer quality than Ishii, and it's almost just as great as Ishii.
Ishii's been there longer.
Like. And obviously Ishii's been there longer and more consistent for longer. That's a very interesting idea. I never think about how you know, despite still being a very great technical wrestler, it's still way more diverse than just, you know, Ishii. Nothing against Ishii, of course. I didn't think about that much. That's interesting. That's very interesting. Well, let's talk about it. I think let's kind of wrap it up here. Let's talk about it. I mean, what kind of put the bow on this a little bit. What do you think the odds are? Where would you put him? If you had to say, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Is he a, do you want to wait to see how this is? You know, we talked about how this year has been really great for him. Do you want to wait to see if he's even more consistent for the next couple of years? Do you want to wait to see if he leaves Japan? That's going to be massive change if that ends up being true. Where are you at sort of, you know, if you were given a ballot, if Dave was like, hey, Curtis, here you go. Vote. You got 3 votes with 11 people. Are you voting Zack Sabre Jr. in day one?
I would. But I'm a huge mark for Zack Sabre Jr. I think most people are going to take a courageous wait and see approach because this year we could be watching him in AEW next year in 2024. We could be watching him win the G1 and headline Wrestle Kingdom in 2025. So, yeah. I mean, this year is going to be, it's another one of those turning points for Zack Sabre Jr. He's got to take a look at the lay of the land and he's got to say, where do I go from here? And I think, this year is going to be a pretty huge moment in his career. He's, you know, 36. He's got to get his last, I wouldn't say his last hurrah, but like if the time is ever going to happen, the time is now. So I think most people are realizing that, and they're going to say, like, let's see where he goes before he's 40.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to send you what the Japan category is probably for the ballot to really stretch your bones a little bit. I just sent you on Slack. You're like 11 people in this year, or, you know, next year, assuming he doesn't add even more people. That's only 3 votes. Those people, are going to be Shima, Satoshi Kojima, and Hiroshi Tenzan as a tag team. Tenkoji, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, Hayabusa, Antonio Inoki, and Seiji Sakaguchi as a tag team. Meiko Satomura, Shingo Takagi, Manama Toyota, and Toshioka Yamada as a tag team. The new people, Zack Sabre Jr., Kento Miyahara, and returning Yoshihiro Takayama. You only get 3 people. That even stretches even more. You vote in Zack Sabre Jr. in. I agree.
Oh, my God. That's
a tough ballot right there. You only get 3 votes, assuming he doesn't add one more person or something.
I mean, I'm wearing a Hayabusa shirt right now under my TMDK shirt.
The loyalty is shining through.
Oh my God. So it's gotta be Hayabusa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just for what they meant to women's wrestling, I would say, Manami Toyota and Yamada.
Yeah.
This
is going off of just your knowledge, no research.
Oh, right. God. How is Fujiwara not in?
I think people are just like, well, his only accomplishment is the Fujiwara armbar. It's, I think that's what
I mean, that everyone does. Yeah. Okay. And Kojima and Tenzan, dude, I love Tenkoji. Yeah. Fuck. This is tough.
Yeah, it's a tough list. It's a tough list. What's interesting about it is, I sort of mentioned the top here, is that, I don't know if I mentioned it during the recording or not, now that I think about it, is that, you know, with Ishii going in and with the beauty pair going in this last ballot, you kind of have this ballot open up a little bit. You know, I looked at the percent votes of last year, of last year's ballot, of, you know, how many percent votes. Obviously, to get into the Hall of Fame, you need 60% or more. I believe Ishii was like on 60% or something like that. Shingo is the highest of not getting in at 41.7%, which to me, that tells me, okay, it was probably like beauty pair, Ishii, and then most people said Shingo after that, but not enough people said Shingo. It's like, oh, okay, then people might go vote Shingo the next year. After that, the next highest from 41.7 is Shima with 23.4.
I could see that. He's been pumping out great matches for many, many years.
And that's sort of what I mean of like the ballot being opening, though, is like Shingo is 41% left over. Everyone else is like 20%. It's like 20% to 10.6 at the lowest of Inoki and Sakaguchi.
If I had to vote, my votes would be for Hayabusa. I'll say Shingo and Yoshihiro Takayama.
Yeah.
Because Big Talk is, that's my fucking dude. And I would love to see him make it into the Hall of Fame before he, while he's still able to enjoy it, we'll say.
I agree.
Wow. What a list. Holy cow. That's tough.
It's the Hall of Fame. They're not nobodies on this list. Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I think I have to obviously do the more research to really give a real tell. And that's kind of what this series is here. But Zack Sabre Jr., I think, has a really interesting case, but I think in a weird way, he may have sort of an inflection point in his career. Does he pop over to AEW? He's obviously flirted with AEW and Ring of Honor a little bit. Does he, if he stays in New Japan, I'm at the point now where it's like, I don't necessarily know. I think he has a really, really good case, but I would love to just see a little bit more. Like, I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm like, give me 5 years more of him in New Japan or something, and I think we got something here. If he can be, you know, 2023 consistent for the next 5 years, I'm probably going to vote him in easily. And 5 years is just a random number I'm pulling, by the way. If he can be that consistent for another couple of years, then I think I'm putting him in. If he can win the world title, then I can probably be putting him in. But I think it's the sort of thing of like, he's been really, really good to great for the past 5 years, but this year was so new, almost refreshing, entertaining, new, and that I really like. I just want to see if we can continue that for a couple more years. So that's where I'm kind of sitting with Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, I think that's the right choice. We may be fans. I'm a huge Zack Sabre Jr. nerd. Mm-hmm. Like.
You're
whole
wearing
family
a TMDK
is
shirt as we speak.
Wearing a TMDK shirt right now because I didn't know if we were doing video. But I think when it comes down to it, Zack Sabre Jr. is one of the best going right now, and he has an opportunity to do even more, and I'd like to see that.
Yeah, and I think same thing. I would like to see that before I really – I would like to see what he can do next before I really consider voting him in, but – you know, we'll see. I mean, hey, we'll get 3 votes. Maybe I'm just like, I'll throw one for Zack Sabre Jr. this time around. We'll see. We'll see how I feel about it, I guess. Curtis, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for coming on the Patreon. Obviously, if you're a listener on the Patreon, you may have already, you should have already listened to Drop Your Shorts, the sort of bonus episodes for Okada Shorts. But of course, if you're not listening for whatever reason, go check that out. Go check out Okada Shorts for all your New Japan coverage. In the Countout Network. So, Curtis, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This is a ton of fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you came on. And at some point, we'll talk to Rafe. I don't know when. 2 years from now, Robbie Eagles is on the line. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But we'll talk to him later, I guess. But yeah, again, Curtis, thank you so much. And we'll talk to everybody next month, probably. All right. Goodbye,
bye,
everybody.
Bye. Love you.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast? It's the brand new New Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.